Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Lorsha Kupa Kumalo is a South African dancer, choreographer, dance teacher, actress, presenter, motivational speaker, and life coach. Lorsha joined her first youth dance group at the age of 15, Cape Youth Dance Company, moving on to join her first professional outfit, the Northwest Dance Company, at the age of 18 years old. At the age of 20, Lorsha was nominated for the FNB Dancer of the Year. This catapulted her dancing career as she went on to perform in various theatre and corporate shows across the world, including Europe and the USA. Lorsha's first break onto local television screens was on the hit ETV show Backstage. Both acting and choreographing for the show, Lorsha played the role of Charmaine. After leaving the show, she moved on to perform in various primetime shows. In 2019 and in 2020, Lorsha was nominated for a SAFTA Award for Best Supporting Actress in a Drama Series for Lockdown, taking home the award in 2019. In 2021, Lorsha was nominated for a SAFTA Award for Best Supporting Actress in a Drama Series for Housekeepers Season 2. With her passion rooted in being a change facilitator and making a positive difference to the youth, Lorsha started a program called Life Skills Through Dance by partnering with brands such as McDonald's, Easy Waves, and Shield. The program, which has to date reached over 3,000 young people and taught them valuable life skills through the medium of dance, empowering their futures. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Lorsha Kupa Kumalo.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I'm in Joburg. I should be on an island. But that's a work in progress, as okay. We know. Island life costs money. So I am in Joburg, but I'm in between Cape Town and Joburg for work. Yeah, what was your other question?
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm amazing. Really, really good. This year's flown by so far already.
Oh, yeah.
I still feel like I'm eating Christmas food. Like my eating, even my like eating plan hasn't caught up with me because my eating plan is still in December holidays. So the 4 kilos I put on during December is still 4 kiloing on my body. And I'm just like, I don't know what to do about that. And like the first quarter's done. Also, Joburg robbed us of a summer. So I feel like that whole summer feeling that came normally comes with, you know, swimming and the weather in Joburg, it rained all through December. Where are you?
I'm in Johannesburg as well.
Also, yeah, so you know it.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Like, I know I'm colored, but I love tanning. I was not a shade darker than this. I feel robbed completely. I'm like, where's the olive skin? So, yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. Let's rewind. At what age, whether it's a child or teenager, did you feel cool? I want to be in this world of creativity, performing, acting. And how did that journey progress?
First, when I started in this, it wasn't my choice. My brother was doing ballroom and Latin American dancing, and he had a partner, and the partner decided that she was done. And when he would go to practices with her, I'd kind of be in the background because he's 2 years older than me. And so when the partner decided she didn't want to dance anymore, my grandma was like, right, you're up here, your shoes, let's go. I was like, what? Because I was also copying in the background and I think she could see that there was a thing. And that's literally how I started dancing. Then at about 8 years old, my cousin was getting lessons from my absolute, she's my second mom, my mentor, my hero, Debbie Turner. I used to go with my gran and my cousin and her partner to their ballroom and Latin dancing lessons. And Debbie owned a studio, a modern dance studio. And she was like, no, this kid is so talented. She has to come dance at my studio. And then I ended up doing modern. And started doing ballroom and Latin and modern dancing at the same time. Fast forward at 18, I auditioned for a professional dance company. I got into Northwest Dance Company. And then at about 21, I got a call from Adele Blank, who this is the next pivot in my life. She called me and she's like, why aren't you at this audition? I'm like, what audition? She's like, you need to be at this audition. It's for a TV show. And I was like, no, I'm busy gigging. I'm on my way to rehearsal for a gig. Because at the time, I then moved to Joburg at the beginning of that year. So I was gigging. And you know how it is with gigging. You don't miss rehearsals. They tell you you're replaceable all the time. So you're quite on it. Yeah. She's like, Losha, obviously a veteran. She goes, Losha. I go, yes, Auntie Adel. She says, if you don't get your back to you, there's going to be trouble. And I'm like, oh my goodness. So she basically like, literally just forced me. I got to the audition and it was the backstage auditions. And the whole way through the auditions, I was just like, I need to get this done. Why do they keep calling me back for the next round? Why do they keep calling people and calling me back? I need to go. And I can't say to her, Auntie Adel, I need to go. No, next round, until they gave us a script. And they're like, can you guys learn this? So obviously I'm in panic mode and I go outside and I cram. Was great at cramming in high school. That's how I got through high school. Not ideal because I don't remember half the stuff at all. However, it does help my acting career evidently. So the way my brain's wired does work great for short term. And so there I am. 5 minutes later, I walk in. I'm like, I'm ready. They're like, how are you ready? I've done this before. And I'm like, no. I'm just ready to do the scene. Because all I'm thinking is I needed to get out of here. I'm going to be in such trouble. I lied about my car having a flat tire. I kept texting, telling them, no, I'm nearly done. I'm on my way. Like, it's getting sorted. And I did the read through, and it was with Gray Hoffmeyer, actually. And they were like, we're also going to improv at the end of the scene. And in my absolute survival mode, I just threw myself in there, I think, because all I was like, I need to get out of here. I don't have time for them to give me notes to call me back and say, do it again. After the first take, they were like, that was amazing. I was like, thank you, can I go? And they were like, yeah, you're done. I was out the door before I was even in the room. And that's how I got onto backstage. And the cliched saying, the rest is history, it really very much is. That's how it's the trajectory of all of it worked out.
What do you enjoy about dance?
Growing up, I think without realizing at the time, it was my decompression. I think being raised in the Cape Flats, you know, we know what those conditions are. We don't have to unpack them. I think being raised in a household that had its own challenges, it was an escapism for me. And thank God that it was a healthy escapism. I felt like there was so much of myself that I felt aligned with when I was in the studio. I felt like there was hope. When at about 16, when I was like, okay, I think I'm gonna just do this as a career. Part of the decision was because I didn't want my mom to have to spread herself any thinner than she already had. And I was like, well, I have this thing. If I can make this work, that's one kind of not less thing for her to worry about, but there's a responsibility that's not so heavy on her, even though she's always been responsible for me. And so I think it gave me vision. It grounded me, decompressed me. When I was in that studio, there was nothing that could touch me. And it continued to do that for me. Of course, like the body part of it, you know, you're training all the time. It's really a bonus. Because now that I'm not a professional dancer, I have to gym. Do you have any idea how serious that is? I mean, if I could, can I swear on your podcast?
Yes, you can.
It's so shitty. Like, I grains in 50 places at the same time. Like, I don't know how I don't end up in Bloemfontein when I'm driving. Because while I'm driving, I'm planning, I'm choreographing, I'm learning lines, I'm conceptualizing. And I'm singing the music that I'm playing in the car. Doing all of that at once. So, yes.
You had this audition for backstage. Then you got the call and you started doing this. Did you ever think that it would be a longevity type of role or path that you'd still be doing it now?
Here's the interesting part. When I then got selected for the role, I was already booked to tour Berlin with Robin Orlin, right? For a piece that I was in. You know Robin Orlin. And so it clashed with when I was supposed to be on stage, on set for backstage. And I got on the phone first. The line producer called me and she was like, these are the dates. I'm like, I can't do that because I'm going to Germany. And she was like, what do you mean you can't do it?
Yeah.
So I'm like, I can't do it because I'm contracted to go to Germany with Robin Orlin. And she kept trying to speak to me about it. And I kept saying no. Eventually, they got the EP, the executive producer, on the phone with me. I have no idea who he is. Because obviously, I'm just in the dance world. The TV world hasn't even occurred to me. He gets on the phone and he goes, Lorsha, okay, send us the contract. And I'm like, there isn't a contract. What do you mean? He goes, you don't have a contract? I'm like, no. He's like, then you don't have to go. I'm like, no. In the dance world, word of mouth is gold. Like, when we agree because the piece has been choreographed and we go with that. And he's like, but you would be legally within your right to withdraw. And I said, I really can't. And then he said to me, and I'll never forget it. He said to me, Lorsha, do you know that this is a national television opportunity? And I paused and I was like, sir, I have no idea what that means. Like, for me, this is what you're offering me. Sounds like a great opportunity, but I have absolutely no guarantee as to whether it's going to work out or not. Then I'm going to have to come back to the dance community and I'm going to have to dance. In my industry, it's so small.
Yep.
But if you drop someone and you win at their expense, every choreographer after that will know. And I have built such a good rapport. I worked so hard to have kind of the standing that I do in the dance industry now. Because I was very fortunate. I could work both theater and corporate at the same time. I was working 6 days a week, 10 hours, 12 hours a day as a dancer. It just was incredible. And they said, so respectfully, I'm really thankful for this opportunity, but I don't think I can do it because I don't know if it's going to work. And I know that dance works for me. I know it. I can guarantee it. So I'm going to pick the sherbet. And I said, I'm so sorry. I apologize. And he's like, you don't know what you're giving up. I said, you know, if this is meant for me, it'll come again. And he hung up the phone. And I carried on with life because I was like, well, you got to stand on your choice now. And this is me at like 21, 22, being this self-assured. 3 months later, they called me back and they're like, are you ready now? I said, I will walk away from whatever it is I'm in now. They can replace me. What the job is I'm on now is they can replace me. And that's how I got onto backstage, had never seen a set in my life. Like, when I say a set, I mean like a soapy set. I've never been on. So like, there's the set and the cameras and I'm like, what the hell is this? What is this? And I get there the weekend before I'm on set on the Monday. I'll never forget. I got there on the Friday. And I think to myself, I better just sit here and watch what they're doing, you know? Because also having been a dancer my whole life, you learn how much you learn from and you can download from observing. So they're going squared up and don't cast a shadow. I'm like, what the hell are they talking about? And so I sat there and I started absorbing. So because I would have had no clue on Monday and had some scenes to do, had not learned scripts other than like in school plays or whatever. And my first week, I remember being so just like, what is this? And then I said to the head cameraman, I said, please don't you want to teach me like what all this technical stuff is? He took me under his wing. His name was Dave. I'll never forget it. And he kind of just showed me like, that's your boom and this is what's going to happen. And this is, so the lighting, always make sure that you, yeah. And he ran me through the whole thing. And once I could understand it better, I think a part of me allowed the artist to emerge, you know? To emerge, what's the word? Was it in English?
Both. It's both, either.
Both.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. You see now this English, that you learn there. And then it just kind of from there went to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And the more I kept doing the next thing, the more I became curious about how I could become a better storyteller and honor the stories of people rather than booking a job. I'm not about booking a job. In my dance career, I was not ever about booking a job. I wanted to do work that was good. And there were times in my dance career, I would say no to certain choreographers because I didn't believe in the way that they conducted their rehearsal space, their performance space, their, I just didn't like, I didn't prefer the space they held. It made me feel very anxious and like I was, I wasn't, I had to perform for the client when they came and I'm like, that doesn't sit well with me. And so even in my acting career, I've been very cognizant of honoring the art and really honoring how sacred it is to me because it's a vehicle through which I'm able to impact. And that's what I value about it. It impacted me. It changed my life, both dance and acting. And I want to continue keeping it in that kind of light for myself. I want to, it must for me remain sacred.
What do you enjoy about about acting?
I think with acting specifically, one, that you can embody a story that perhaps you've never spoken about, you've never encountered, you've never heard of. It's a new world. And you can kind of use that to impact, you know? It doesn't matter what the story is that I'm telling. I always want to, my intention is to honor whoever the story belongs to out there. And so I feel like it's a way of serving. I feel like either through the character that I'm playing, I've brought some kind of insight to someone who didn't know the backstory of the character, or allow someone at home perhaps not to feel as bad about themselves, or not to feel alone, or not to feel like they're isolated in a situation. So when I take on roles, I really go in. I hold nothing back because my intention is to honor the people through the story, whether they've experienced it, whether a family member, someone they know. I also think the most powerful thing about especially being a television actor is you have the capacity for that moment to be able to transcend someone into another space, to move their reality. I know growing up watching things like Bold and the Beautiful, whatever it was, the time when I was sitting there, I was not in my environment. I was in their world. And so I honor that. I really do feel that there is so much power and beauty in being able to take people away from where they are in that moment, you know? And above all is to honor human stories, because there's someone out there and the story belongs to them and you don't get to judge it. You do get to really investigate it. That's why research is so important when you take on a role, because you want to cover all aspects of it. And sometimes the script doesn't have all aspects of it, right? But for me, that it's really both my dance and acting are vehicles of service for me. I like seeing it that way and experiencing it that way too.
How do you approach research?
It depends, right? So, because on long form, you'll research as per the storyline. Sometimes you're in A storyline, B storyline, C storyline. So it just depends on when your storyline is at the forefront. When it's something like, let's say abuse, right? Of any kind. You want to be able to know that you understand, first of all, what it is. Then you want to understand why it happens. Then you want to understand how the human responds to it. So YouTube is absolutely very useful. I think back in the day to research your roles were very, very difficult because we didn't have all of this available to us. When I had to play a prisoner, for example, in lockdown, I didn't need to do that much research because I really just played the examples of what I saw growing up. And those examples weren't ones that I really liked. I played the fear that I felt growing up in those environments. Like I literally just embodied the very thing that I didn't want to be and the very thing that I almost despised growing up, you know? So when I had to play that aggressive prisoner who's like, doesn't care about anyone, is wrathic, that was very interesting for me because I had real life references of that growing up. So it depends. See, sometimes when you don't have the knowledge, you want to gain the knowledge, and other times you actually do have the experience, but you also don't want to bring so much of yourself into it because then you become petty about the role and you're so anal and you take things personally. And, you know, everyone on a set wants to tell a great story, including your director, your writer, your crew, your your cast. Like, everyone has to tell a great story. I think when we get too, I suppose, precious about stuff, and it happens very easily. It's like this. You can get precious. I take it a moment at a time. Like, whatever the script is, if I feel like I can access it, I will. I don't like over preparation sometimes makes you very rigid. I also like to be open to what happens on set. So yeah, it varies from role to role. You know, there's no one set way that I like to approach it. I also feel like that makes you very limited in how you can experience the thing. Mm.
It's when you've mentioned that you lockdown prison. I thought you just were tapping into us having to be prisoners in lockdown. I didn't really
in lockdown.
That's why I was laughing. I wasn't about
actually. That's so funny. And you know what's so funny is that during lockdown they had like pictures of the lockdown show, the cast with Cyril in the middle. Our prison number. That was so funny. I'm sure those pictures are still out there. I canned myself. That's what people used to like post about lockdown. It was very funny. Very funny.
What's the difference for you in being sort of in a character in a long, sort of long show like backstage or soapy compared to being in a shorter series, compared to potentially being in a movie?
You know, this is something I wish that I'd known earlier in my career, is when you do long form, you have to approach it differently as to when you do short, like series or film or anything that's for a shorter period of time. When you do long form, there is a recipe, and the recipe is, here are the ingredients, this is the method, and then it comes out and you eat the cake, right? You have to allow yourself to first accept and embrace that that is how it is, finished. So you get there, you know your lines, you give to the character, and there's like a point at which you need to choose when your intensities happen. They can't be every single day. You can't want to dissect what your line means and what this is every single day. So you got to look at it like a marathon and not like a sprint. When you're on series on film, there is an opportunity for you to delve deeper, to unpack more, to be a little bit more curious about how much further you can take it. I think emotionally having that maturity allows you to be able to serve the environment for what it is. It's not just about the role. It's not just about doing a great scene. For me, it's about also being cognizant of the environment that I'm serving in, or the environment that is around me. No environment is the same. We know that even as humans, firstly, psychologically, to be able to prep for that for me is very important. It's like, here, you don't have to be precious, do your work well, be invested, but also remember that this doesn't happen 5 days a week for the next year, girl. Just take it with what it comes with. And then when I absolutely, series are my favorite things to do because it's short, I can manage the outcome of it already, because before I start shooting, I know where it's going. I can build where my character's doing what emotionally. I can build on the continuity. Where do I want to take my moments? Where do I want to step back a little bit? So it's a lot more strategic with regards to the work itself, not just strategic with regards to the psychology behind it. Like with anything in life, you know, for me, the thing that works is to approach my work with a level of awareness. To be aware, I need to be in some form of alignment with myself. I need to do that work of self, that work that comes that only I can do, so that I show up in a space, not only serving through the story that I'm telling, but serving while the journey is happening. That work in 3 years from now, everyone's going to forget, but everyone on set's going to remember what the feeling of that project was. I like the feeling of the project to override what the end product is. For me, it's more important how I navigate the creation process. I want that to, I always say, people are waiting for legacy to be this building that they leave behind, or this thing that they do, or this charity, or this. And that's great. I have absolute respect for that. But we forget that we're the legacy in every day. I am the legacy of how I interact with people, in what I leave with people, in how someone else has left me. That for me is about what my legacy is and my funeral. Please don't say all the work I did and spend an hour telling people how great I was at my work. No, I want you to talk about me. Talk about whether you had an encounter with me, whether we had an encounter, what we shared, what that was. Yeah. Because really, you can Google me, and I'm sure ChatGPT will even tell you more about me now. But for me, I am interested and I'm curious about how I lend myself to a space, how I am when I'm in a space. The work can be great. I want the journey to be equally great, even if it's challenging. I'm not asking for roses and, oh, it's beautiful and everyone's blooming. Oh, these environments are, they're hard. They're 12-hour days, 5-6 days a week, you know. They're hard environments, but how we experience them doesn't have to be hard. They can be challenging, but we can find the beauty in those challenges. And so that's what I want my work to be about first. I don't want it to be like, oh, she's great. She does great work, but my goodness, let's not work with her again. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because who you are is as important as what you do. For me, that's what I, how I navigate this journey for myself.
So the latest project with Showmax, tell us about it, your character.
Yes, it's a show called Bierpunt. It's a show about a family, essentially, but it's centered around tennis. And what's been interesting for me watching the show, I hardly ever watch my work, by the way. It's just a thing, or I'll watch it after the kind of hypes die down or after everyone else has watched it. So when someone stops me and says, oh, that was a great scene, I'm not attached to it at all, right? And that's the thing also, when I'm done filming something, I completely detach from it. I'm done with it. I leave it behind. I can't sit and go, oh, I should have done that better, or I don't do that whole thing. Huh? And so I think what's so incredible for me about the show, and I realized this while we were in the filming process, is it's really a show about how complex family dynamics can be. So I play the mom of two young adults, I'd call them, because one's in matric and one's in varsity. And my husband on the show is someone who's quite set in what his idea for his kids are. Obviously, because he's experienced certain disappointments in his life, and so he doesn't want his kids to go down that same road. And the mom is kind of caught between, does she choose her kids or does she choose her husband's opinion? Because that's also the thing, right, is as much as women are human, somehow the decision has to end with the male figure in the house. And so with the dad or with the husband or whatever it is, partner. And while I was filming, I thought to myself, you know, how many times in real life are women in a position where they know that their kid could be really brilliant at this thing, but the head of the house has a different idea of what their futures look like. I then realized, as parents, and I'm a parent, I have an 18-year-old and a 20-year-old, you realize that as parents, there's so much of how you parent that's not about who your child really is, but is about who you would like your child to be.
Yeah.
Yes, you have to dream and have vision for your child, but how aligned is that with them too? Yes, you must want better for them, but how aligned is it with who they truly are, yeah, and what their evolution and journey is at the time? And so the dad doesn't want the daughter to play tennis at all because he had disappointment in his cricket career. It never took off. And so he limits her, and she makes the choice to go against him and to choose her child. And the dynamic in that is pretty tough on the mom, because I think she does things that then obviously become questionable. But to her, they are completely valid because she's doing it for her child. And so it's this question of, like, you know, what's right for you, is that what's right for me? If I'm saying I'm doing it for my child, surely that's honorable, even if it is the wrong thing. It really made me take a good look at life and just how people are experiencing different things on different levels. The son, who's incredibly intelligent, successful, was going to be a doctor, completely bombs. And he's like, I don't want this. This is not what I want. It's what you want me to have. And you may think that, well, if he sacrifices the next 7 years and he becomes a doctor, and that's cool. But is he happy? Because what does he want to bring home? And at this age, he may think that this is horrible for him now, but he's going to be thankful for it when he's 30. But is he? We don't know that. So because we don't know it, our kids are going to work and they're going to be doctors, and then they're going to be in therapy for the next 5 years because they now need to debunk all of the stuff, all the moving away from self, from truth, to be able to survive a situation they didn't really want. That's also what we know as adults, right? Is like we come in and we know what it is, and then we do what society says in the systemic way, the programming. And then we spend the rest of the half of our lives unlearning that and paying someone to help us to unlearn it, because now we're so deep in it that we're looking for a semblance of ourselves somewhere in this mess, in this mud, and it's murky. Again, it made me go, what? Each person has their truth. Are we spending enough time holding that truth for each other? And my answer was no, because we're not spending enough time holding our truths for ourselves.
Exactly.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook @CelebSavant. That's CelebSavant.